Today is Sunday, the 29th of January, 2023, and it's been a very difficult Shabbat. In America, they knew about the tragedy long before Shabbat began, but here I didn't know anything till on my way to Shul Shabbos morning at 6:15. Some man my age, who's Dorei Dorot Yerushalmi, and he on the way to shul, he says, "Nu ata shamata ta chadashot hanoraot." And already before davening, I was filled in. Then when my children came over, they already came with guns, and they knew as much as I did. We didn't know any real information till after Shabbat. But the war continues. It's from 1882 on, basically. Jews are killed to come home. And Jack asked me, why do we suffer so much? And we're still traumatized, myself and Jack, by the Applebaum tragedy, Nava and David, Shem Yikom Damam, and Tzadik Varalo, Rasha V'Tovlo. The Sefer Iyov, we have to bow our heads, Tzadik B'Emunoto Yichya. When will it become clear? Le'atid lavol, the Chafetz Chaim said that. To all these questions, when Mashiach comes, suddenly we'll see all the answers. Az Yashir Moshe, and one explanation is, Az Yashir le'atid lavol. It's not what happened in the past, but will happen in the future. And all right, the whole question of Hashgacha Pratit, I saw it's discussed in the Alonim this week. Is it, I can't go, if I go into detail, it'll take an hour and a half. But my own feeling is, as much as I can understand, I understand the rest. Botech b'Hashem chesed yisovedenu. I have to go with that point of view. On a general area, and this mainly the Rambam and Rav Nevuchim, you see Hashgacha Pratit, that we're alive again after so many thousands of years. On an individual basis, it becomes a lot harder because you see a tzaddik suffering and a rasha prospering. But if you believe in Olam HaEmet, it falls into place. It makes sense. I only want to say that my response after shul, a whole group of us were walking home together. I had three talmidim actually davening with me. And I made the point that anyone that our biggest problem is not enough Jews carry guns. And in the shul in Neve Yaakov, it's a Haredi area. And who knows how many there know how to shoot. And the same thing in Har Nof, the terrible tragedy when the Rav's grandson was killed. And I happen to know three out of the five who were killed. One of them killed was a grandson of people I grew up with on Washington Avenue. And again, we must serve in the army. We must carry guns. And I was proud, my son-in-law and grandson, later when they came over on Shabbat, they had guns with them. I said, always carry. And then I checked. I have other grandsons with guns, and all of them were carrying guns. But Yomo was wrong on one level. When I mentioned this in the office, Yomo said, Rabbi Miller will come in with the gun today. So we just checked with Rabbi Miller. He's almost my age. His fingers can't even get the bullets. You understand when you get older? Have you ever seen how my fingers work? They work backwards. So he says he sold this gun. He can't carry it because to load, you got to be able to load quickly and you got to shoot accurately. Because whenever there are a lot of people around, that's where stray bullets can kill the wrong people, as we know. All right, Ad Kan, but my heart breaks, and I just say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ad Kan, we've suffered so much, we've paid such a heavy price. Imagine a 14-year-old kid goes to shul Friday night, and he's buried Motzei Shabbos. I mean, it's just overwhelming, okay? But the Lebedik Adaf came weiter, and we have to move on. Jack also wanted me to mention, I don't know what to do. Other people bother me too with questions. I just dictated a long email this morning. It seems that there was an interview with Rabbi Meiselman, Ephraim Goldberg, my student, Rabbi Goldberg, interviewed Rabbi Meiselman. It seems that Rabbi Meiselman's description of the Rav is very different than my description. So people are writing to me, who is correct? So I've lectured on this thousands of hours, B'li Guzma, both in Gris and all over the world. I have no time now. Maybe when I finish the yeshiva in Eastern Europe in another 10, 15, 20 years, I'll go back to the Rav and redo 22 years on the Rav. But I only want to tell you, his interpretation, but I only want to say the following. The following people didn't know what to do for me, to thank me for what I've done for the Rav's memory. First of all, Shulamit Meiselman, Rabbi Meiselman's mother. She can't speak now, she's gone. She will tell you my interpretation is correct. Anne Gerber, the Rav's other sister, she will tell you my interpretation is correct. I cannot repeat what Rabban Soloveitchik and Elka said to me after the two volumes on the Rav appeared. It would be too arrogant in my part. My interpretation is correct. You can ask Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, the Rav's daughter, and I can go on and on. So Baruch Hashem, you want to choose between me and Moshe Meiselman? Freedom of expression, choose. The Rav was complicated. Everyone saw the Rav through his own prisma. This past Friday night, I have to tell you, Anima, I came home, I told Malka, you see, the Ribbono Shel Olam is rewarding me. When my two volumes on the Rav came out, people jumped on me to kill me, to rip me apart, and I'm foolish. I take for granted people are intelligent. I should have written, this is not a definitive biography. This is not the way I wrote on Rabbi Revel and on Rabbi Silva. I cannot write a definitive biography. I am a Talmud of the Rav. I love him. I am prejudiced. I wrote the introduction. Everywhere I wrote, I'm just covering one aspect of the Rav. His ability to recreate the past and his life. And I quote the Rav talking about Rav Chaim Heller. The Rav compliments him. I said the same ability that the Rav said Rav Chaim Heller had, the Rav had. And I give you two volumes of the Rav, word by word, talking about his life. Well, I can tell you in the last few months, I've met people, very important, world-famous people. I met Friday night, a guy comes into shul, says, is this seat taken? Place was crowded. I say, no, it's at the Shvilcha. He sits down. I notice he has notes on medical ethics. And I take a look. He's dealing with the Besamim Rosh on suicide. Elliot, how many people in the world spent over 1 year giving shirm on the Besamim Rosh? I know only one person. His initials are A-R-R. I started talking to this guy. This guy is shaking. Yeah, who do I look like? What am I? He figures, a Neusmaff, a Trumpenig. He says, what's your name? I said, Aaron Rakefe. The guy fainted on the spot. I really found out he's a world-famous medical doctor. Ralph and research, he's in Jerusalem Post, just quoted what he's doing. My daughter told my grandson, who was privy to all this, Tzadik Yesod Olam. He's married to my student. And he told you her books on the Rav. I said, I wrote more than that, Baruch Hashem. I don't want to go further with the conversation. He went 10 blocks out of his way to walk me home with my grandson. As well, my grandson was offended. Generally, we shmooze, we this. No, he came home, his mother told him, Tzadik Yisrael. Ad Khan, let me see, let's teach. Oh, I mentioned that the Netziv and the Chafetz Chaim fathered children over 70. So I got a very fascinating email from Dr. Bill Gvirtz. Rav Rakefet, Rav Chaim Halberstein, this is the sons of a Rav, married four times. The last time he was in his late 70s when he produced his 18th child. The future is the Lenin of a Rebbe. My father received a bracha from the Zalanova Rebbe in a Nazi work camp. And this was the bracha. Abedir und dein Mishpacha velen die Rishoyim nicht haben kein Schlita. Aber bei mir ist schön tunkel. Let me translate from the people who don't speak the real Jewish language. For me, for you and your family, the Rishayim will not have shlita, power. You're going to make it. But for me, it's already tunkel, it's dark. And the Nazis, Yimach Shmam, killed him a few days later. My parents both survived, as did my sister Dorothy, 2.5 years old when the Nazis invaded Poland. You know who Dorothy married? Julie Berman. Julie Berman, his wife is Dorothy Gvirtz Berman. So that, I think, that's a piece of history. Okay, the other question I got will fit right into the share. So we finished out last week the whole question of doctors and healing. Sit over here, so I can see your face. Josh, right?
Yeah, I apologize. I've been in America
the last 2 weeks. No, Josh, sit down, relax. Don't have to apologize for being in America. Norm Schless, he's also an American. He's from Atlanta, and you got to thank him. Do you drink Coca-Cola on the Pesach?
I don't.
Why not?
I don't drink Coca-Cola ever.
Do you eat Drake's cakes?
Say again?
Drake's cakes.
Yeah.
That's the Rav Hamakshin. So you write him a note of thanks after Shia.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, back here. So, the whole question of a doctor, with all the difficulty involved, anything in life has difficulty. Those of you who study psychology or psychiatry, someone's in an automobile accident. The best thing you can tell them to do is start driving again. And this is right down the line. There are always risks in life.
Get back on the horse.
Yeah, no, you teach. I've taught so much Torah, so many years, so many students. All right, I've had a lot of success. I don't deny it. Some of you sitting here, imagine a Rebbe talking to you and talking to the screen, and they're Talmidim here who know me more than 50 years. On the other hand, I've had failures. I've had, you have Talmidim. I can tell you very well. I can tell a successor very well. I meet someone who's my Talmud, Talmidah, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 40 years ago. Rabbi, oh, what a pleasure. Then you meet someone and say, oh, Rabbi Rothkopf, or Rabbi Rakefik, how are you? Boy, I want to smack that person's face and run as far as I can away. He got nothing out of me whatsoever. I failed. I should smack my own face, not his face, excuse me. So, all right, this is medicine, and kanshinit narishut, and all right, the question of an operation and getting guidance, I mean, that's fascinating. And that Rav Chaim Weiser I showed you, and the Hasidic world, there's no doubt in my mind that no Hasid would undertake a medical procedure without consulting his Rebbe. And if someone consulted me, I would always call David Applebaum. I say, David, this is the situation. What do I do? What do I answer? And I call back the person, say, look, I'm an emeritus in this, but I spoke with Dr. David Applebaum, and he said the following. And that was it. That was the final psak. And I want you to know, I suffer today, because I don't know David Lo Aleinu, who's gone so many years, Hashem Yikom Damo. But all right, I have a grandson, a doctor. I have two grandchildren, medical doctors. And I consult with them, Baruch Hashem. All right, now we want to move on to a new issue, very fascinating. I won't finish it in one Sheyua, but you'll see what we'll come to. And what's amazing is that the Monday and the Sunday Shia will coalesce down the line. It's Minishamayim, I can say, but leave that for the future. All right, we're in Mishnah Halacha, Chelik Tetzayin, Siman Lamed Vav. And it's from 20 years ago, basically. And the question is about Shiva. This question represents our generation. When I was growing up, there were no Balei Tshuva. Just people running away like crazy from Yiddishkeit. If there were Balei Tshuva, they were off the wall. You had Halachim and you had Breslava. That I do remember. That we always viewed Balei Tshuva there was a mirror, who became a breslover, and oh my God, you got to get married before you're 20. I don't know if you're aware of all this. And the Malachim, they were off the wall. It's not just my wife's family has Malachim, but I knew some Malachim. I remember one Malach came to his parents, sent him to MTA. He ran away to Torah Vadas within minutes. He couldn't handle MTA. It was too broad, too secular, etc. But today, wow, where would we be without the Balei Tshuva? I would estimate at least onto 800,000 Balei Tshuva across the world. Could be even more. I know in South Africa, they told me when I was there, 90% of the Shomer Shabbos Jews are Balei Tshuva. It's 90%, he said to me. And these were reliable people. They had a rule with the Chevra Kadisha, you had to be Shomer Shabbos for 10 years in order to be allowed to work in the Chevra Kadisha. So you see, this question, here you have a Baal Tshuva who's in his early 50s, and he wants to marry. He's come back. The life, when you're not in the Torah framework, you're like an animal. Pardon me, that's the reality. You do what you want, when you want, with whom you want. You understand? Then no limits on what you eat, no limits on how you work and how you rest and how you sleep, and no limits on your sexual activity. Yeah, that's it. Bishvili nivra ha'olam. So here he wants to dye his beard. He wants to have a woman young enough to have children. Now, I just want to comment, my dear student Rabbi Grinstein gets all upset with his Rebbe because occasionally I maledict the left wing, the irreligious, the retrogressives, not progressives, Old Day Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, there are Tinoket Shenishpa'u. So let me tell you halacha l'maisa. There's no contradiction. On a personal level, the Rebbe used to say this, I never rebuke, I never reprimand a reform or conservative rabbi. That doesn't help. On a personal level, you're very nice. How many people in this room gave Mordechai Kaplan a lift in their car? Josh, did you ever give Mordechai Kaplan a lift in your car? A guy named Rakefet did. They'll tell you the story. He lived around the corner from BMT. I'm going back 51, 52 years. For me, it's only yesterday. So, remember Mordechai? And then Mordechai shows me his fringes. Remember what he said to me? See, I wear fringes too. So I said, Professor Kaplan, I wear tzitzit because God commanded you wear fringes because it's a Jewish civilization. Oh, his face lit up in a smile. Oh, you know my book? I said, yes, Professor Kaplan, I know your book, Judaism as a Civilization. Early 30s he published. I have a lot to say, it's not for now. Josh, I have a real problem. Anything I mention, I've lectured on for hours. And if I do that, I won't. I've got to teach. Now, but there's no contradiction. When the Rav spoke in public, that was Torah Minashamayim, Misora. All that went with it. The exact opposite of reform, conservative reconstructionism. Same thing. I will yell, I will shout. That's teaching. That's debating. Remember, they're very sharp in their critique. You're a Zionist. You trampled the Palestinians. They own the land. Who are you? Well, you got to be sharp and strong. But on a personal level, Lapid Satinok Shinishba. What does he know about Yiddishkeit? Barak, the biggest Amoritz in the world. His Hebrew is better than mine, but it doesn't make him a Talmud Chacham. You don't know what you did. You don't know who they descend from. Victor, you know what Barak's original name is? Bork. Did you learn in Nevadik with me 100 years ago? Our Rebbe was Rav Bork. He descends from Gedolei Nevadik. Lapid Gedolei Rebbeim in Ungarn, in Hungary. But they're Tinoket Shenishpa. It's Rachmanis. But sometimes when you're sharp, you shake them up. And I said something in class that people have repeated already all over the world. Remember what I said? The difference between us to them? Where did Lapid go when he became prime minister? Yad Vashem. Where does everyone else go? The Kotel. And you see, that represents the tremendous chasm, how we come to Israel. Lapid is here for one reason, anti-Semitism. Holocaust. It's the second generation. His father's survivor. I'm here. The Kotel Maravi, the Beit HaMikdash, the Makom HaMikdash, Eretz HaKodesh. What a difference. Okay? That's sharp. But it challenges. Alright, so here this poor individual wants to dye his beard, wants to look young. And the person writing to Rav Menashe Klein quotes Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein deals with something similar. And here we already start to uncover the sources. I'm quoting now from Rav Moshe Feinstein, the second time he did Yoredeya. Chelik Sheni, Yoredeya, Siman Samech Aleph. Very fascinating. I see Panim Chadashot. Are you visiting or?
Talmud visiting.
I can't hear?
Talmud visiting.
A Talmud. Name?
Naftali
Schnell. Hey, Vanti, we've corresponded.
Yeah.
Welcome, Naftali. Yeah. Let me just write down your name, so if I pick on you, I'll know who to pick on. Naftali, it's very fascinating who he's corresponding with. The Tshuva is from 1960. And he's corresponding with Reb Moshe Tzvi, Reb Moshe Tzvi Aryeh Bick. This is the famous Reb Bick. And I've lived a long life, and there's some great Rabbanim I knew intimately. Reb Bick is one of them. Reb Moshe Tzvi Bick, very fascinating. The family's from Meshbich. My wife's family on her mother's side are Meshbitz Chassidim. And Reb Bick's uncle was their posek. He was mamish, the posek for the family. And Rav Moshe Bick went to, I'll reveal secrets already today. At my age, I'm revealing secrets, so the future should know, future world should know. Rav Bick is a graduate of MTA, Yeshiva Sibitzchol Chanan, went on, it can be checked out, maybe be a graduate of the college, Gab Smicha. He was very close to Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Now, one of the Rebbeim in YU was Rav Burak, Burak, B-U-R-A-C-K. We used to say Rav Burak. Rav Burak was a Telza, and he was a Rav in Williamsburg, had a big shtel in Williamsburg. And because of the shtela, he would only come in midday to say a shir. So they needed a Rebbe in the morning to take the class, take care of the class. Rav Bick took care of the class. So I once asked Rav Bick, why didn't you, and by the way, he was, you know, totally English, totally American, and quite an open-minded individual, as I've told you over the decades. And I once asked him, how come you didn't remain in the yeshiva? And he told me he thinks they considered me too frum, too Hasidic. So it was an interesting comment, and he didn't remain in the yeshiva. But he began to rub in the Bronx, and later when the Bronx burned down, he moved to Borough Park. But you see that Rav Moshe has such derech eretz for him, and he was a posek mufak. If you want one story about Rav Bick that I always tell, Rabbi Braunschweigel. Norm, remember Rabbi Abba Braunschweigel? Rabbi Braunschweigel had an older brother, Joe Braunschweigel, who became Joe Brown. And they were survivors, never what they went through. And Joe Brown, Abba, came to America, a kid, he was able to go to school. But Joe was older, so he became a photographer, a wedding, bar mitzvah, and we were poor people in the Bronx. And one time he had a machlokes with a woman over the fee for the photography for the bar mitzvah. And $25, $50, whatever the amount. And he says to the woman, Macha Schweig, du bist nicht mehr wie a Frau, you're not more than a lowly woman. That was the implication. Be quiet. She took him to Din Torah with Rabbi Bick, and Rabbi Bick fined him, if I remember correctly, $25 he had to give the lady for calling her, you're no more than a lowly woman. Okay, so that's Rabbi Bick. It reveals he wasn't the ordinary Hasidic Rebbe that you would think wouldn't have this feeling for a poor lady. Now, Reb Moshe writes to him, Samachti ba'ol b'mashiyein kvol tifato b'kovid rosh u'besim leiv b'sifriyei v'kibdani b'harot hanachonot. And wow, he says, I thank you for commenting, for looking at my tshuvit. In other words, for taking it, Reb Moshe views it as a compliment that Reb Moshe Bick is taking him seriously. You follow? This is beautiful, beautiful. And they're discussing the whole question. I have to go backwards because Reb Menashe Klein calls Reb Moshe first, and calls the Shulchan Aruch. We'll get to the Gemara, which starts it all. We'll get there last. But it's a halacha psuka that a man is not allowed to look into a mirror. Now, why? All right, because looking into a mirror is a feminine activity. And we are not allowed to engage in activities that are feminine. And you talk about dyeing your beard. Who dyes hair? Women, not men. And the mirror, and Rav Moshe writes about it. Now, the Rav Moshe had an interesting viewpoint, and this is where he's dialoguing with Rav Bick, and you'll see afterwards that Rav Menashe Klein sort of differs with Rav Moshe. What am I talking about? Mark, you looked into a mirror this morning? I'll ask myself. I looked into a mirror maybe three times. When I woke up, I looked in, I washed my eyes. I had an eye infection a week ago. I brushed my teeth this morning. That was already in gris. I ate something. I looked into the mirror, the toothpaste. You look into a mirror. Wait a minute. Why is it us to look into a mirror? See, if looking into a mirror is the act itself is forbidden, it's just women who look into a mirror. A man, not allowed. It's a woman's activity. Or no. Looking into a mirror, it's forbidden if you're looking in for the sake of making yourself more beautiful. A lady looks into the mirror, her eyebrows, her lipstick, her rouge. A man, what are you looking into? All right, and Reb Moshe holds la halacha, there's nothing wrong with looking into a mirror if you're looking into a mirror simply to see that you look respectable, that your hair is fine, your yarmulke is on properly, your glasses are on properly, your beard is trimmed properly. A chabadnik, of course, won't trim his beard, but some of them fold it up. I've seen tricks with Chabad. One day the guy has 3 inches and the next day 7 inches. They fold it up. They can do tricks. A chassid can do tricks. Ich bin a Litvak. I don't know those tricks. Maybe that's why I don't have a beard. But you see, is it looking in per se that's forbidden? Or no, is it only looking in when you wind up looking in long, fussing with your face, your clothes, and what do you know? You emulate a woman. Rav Moshe holds, look into a mirror, no prohibition. Looking into a mirror like a lady, then that is wrong. Alma, the ha'isogu al etzem ha'maseh shel satanashim l'kishutehem. And it's when shegam kein hu mehamaseh shel satanashim b'yetshem mitkashtot k'dei ladad eich l'kishkashet. And you see, they're playing with their faith. I only had women in my house. My wife, I only had daughters. Yeah, I looked into a mirror a half second. Even when I looked into a mirror, my wife was straightening out my shirt. It's not on properly. The sweater's not on properly. The kippah has to be scented. There are all types of halachot. But a woman looks into a mirror, it's an avodah. It's not something that takes 1 second. And that's why he says that when is it forbidden? Whom he, and he describes be often hayafeh hu makshif haisha b'shein yafeh umekushetet. Kafima shemarbel yistakel b'mare hashivata b'yofi mitraba umishabachot isha b'yofi levusha. Wow. Reb Moshe is right with it. Jana, this is what I told you last week. This is JFK. Remember Dallas, 1962? Remember the motorcade got started late? They were waiting for Jacqueline and the Secret Service. Someone came over, a reporter, what are we waiting for? And the president said, we're waiting for Jacqueline. Takes them longer to get themselves together. But they sure look better than we do when they're ready. And this is exactly what Reb Moshe is saying. And Sh'omra Dolesh, Sh'omra Eitzel Hamara, Kach V'Kach Zman. And Reb Moshe is right with it, that the longer the woman stays at the mirror playing with her face, people say, oh, see, she cares the way she looks. She's faputzing sich in Yiddish. Vic, how would you translate it? Faputzing. Dressing up, looking better. And if this is the case, that if a man stands at a mirror, of Moshe says, and plays with his face, and is all concerned, makpid biyofi, umitchashev bezeh kanashim, and he's emulating a woman, that is absolutely forbidden. But if he's simply standing at the mirror, covered adam, that he should look decent, that he should be able to go out and look decent, there is nothing wrong with the mirror. It's not the mirror per se. You follow? This is the touchstone of the machloket between Reb Menashe Klein and Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe, the mirror per se is not forbidden. But if it's emulating a woman with that type of results, then it would be forbidden. Reb Menashe Klein is choshesh that it could be the mirror itself is forbidden. And this is the question, this is what Reb Moshe deals with. Now, dyeing a beard, according to Reb Moshe, okay, there's an additional problem here. Dyeing a beard, per se, maybe it's not forbidden. Maybe men do it. That's the Gemara Nazir I quoted a few weeks ago. We'll come back to it. Maybe men do it, but there's a side issue. What about Gnevadat. And this takes us into the whole question of Shidduchim. You might want to put a Shidduch together. I have a very good track record with my students years ago when I taught boys and girls, men and women. Elliot may remember, I used to carry notes back and forth. I carried for BMT from Gold and Michlala. I carried for Michlala and Gold from BMT, Chris Kolel, etc. I have a good track record. So now, but you're introducing people. All right, the girl is 25. And you say, well, she may be in her young 20s. Are you allowed? Not allowed. This becomes a big problem with dyeing a beard. Here this girl is, let's say, for the sake of argument, in her early 30s, and you're introducing her to a man who is in his mid-40s. Dye the beard? I know what I look like at the end of 9 days. I look like I'm 110 years old. I have a chaver who's my classmate, I can't mention his name, never married. Kozman, he dyed a beard. I used to meet him, a black beard. I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm 80 and he looks 70 and he looks 50. Lo aleinu, he was in an accident and never totally recovered, and he never dyed his beard again, which told me his chances of marriage are over. Once he never dyed his beard again, when I meet him, I look my age. He looks, we're exactly the same age. We were born 6 weeks apart. He was born Sukkot, and I was born Hanukkah, Joe DiMaggio's second year in the major leagues. And I meet him. Wow, looks so old. So that Reb Moshe says that this whole question of the mirror and the man and is allowed to do things, what is the purpose? What is the result? You dye your beard to, like a woman dyes her hair? That would be forbidden. Dyeing your beard to get married? Why not? And Reb Moshe raises another issue. This is right on the last page of the tshuva. Dyeing your beard? You're at work. I remember when teaching in Israel, when you turn 50, your teaching load is reduced legally. In other words, teaching in a college until you're 50, I think it was 16 hours. I'm working from memory. When you turn 50, it's 12 hours a week and you get the same pay. Why do they have that system? Because, as you all know, there's no one sitting in front of me who's so young. If Rabbi Miller had to say he can't carry a gun anymore because he can't load the bullets, when you get older, you're more tired, you can't do what you used to do. At my age, my wife and I both say it takes us twice as long to do half as much. And now, Natan is working in this firm. He's been working there for 30 years. And the boss, wait a minute, Natan, do I get enough hours out of you? You're in high tech. How many programs? You're over 50. The boss is starting to think maybe get rid of him, retire him, get someone younger. Takes Rakefet twice as long to do half as much. Let me get someone who can do twice as much in half the time. So, and Reb Moshe has the shaila right here. And Reb Moshe says, this is all the mirror, the dying, the woman, the process, the why, forbidden, or the purpose behind it is important. So, Natan comes and asks a simple shaila. I want to dye my beard. Why do I want to dye my beard? I want the boss to know I can work like a youngster. No need to get rid of me. I can work like a youngster. I can do everything a 20-year-old can do, and I can do it better because I've been working here 30 years. And Reb Moshe says, yeah, it could be that it's totally mutter, but here the question is again, geneva dot. When you're 55, Can you really work like a 25? Miluim in the army. I did basic training. I did Miluim. I turned 49. I get a letter. You're out. The army doesn't need you. Too old. I sent in a letter of protest. Got back in the army. I turned 52. I think it was, or 54. Again, I get a letter. Goodbye. All my protests didn't help. All I got out of it was a farewell salute when they gave me a medal for fighting in 82 in the first Lebanese war, Mifsa Shlom HaGalil. So I have that war ribbon until today, and if I lived in Russia, I would wear it on Yom HaAtzma'ot. You follow? Josh, did you ever live in Russia? You didn't work for the Mossad in Russia? Didn't work under the communists, you weren't scared out of your wits, but you did all you could to help your people? Oh, I don't know. I know I worked in Russia, scared out of my wits, did everything I could to help my people. And on Sundays, they dress up, they wear all their medals. It's a sight to see. In Russia, you didn't get paid, you got medals. And the army wouldn't take me back. That's it. Miluim, over. Certain age, cut off. Gone. That's Reb Moshe. So Reb Moshe says, La halacha, number one, you can look into a mirror. The only issa with looking into a mirror would be if you start playing with your face and your lips, and I don't know, you're like a lady, and the God have mercy today, men wear earrings and nose rings. All right, but if you're just looking into the mirror to see that you look decent, that your eyes are clean, your forehead is clean, your kippahs on, no problem. Dyeing the beard could very well be that if it's necessary, you're not doing it to, like a woman. A woman does it. No one should see my gray hair. I know one lady, a great lady, whose name I mentioned 45 minutes ago. She had a shekel made with streaks of white hair in it. And I asked her why. She said to me, I don't want to mislead people. People wear a shekel. Old people, what not, why put on a brunette shekel, a blonde shekel? B'nai Shalom, I joined with Rav Avadja. Shtekels like that are forbidden. Add my signature. Even though Rav Shach refused to sign. You know why, Mark? You know the story. Remember, don't ever forget what I told you, because Rav Shach refused to sign. He said, the Chofetz Chaim's throat is going with that shekel. The Chofetz Chaim's wife went with the shekel. Get out of here with this Issa. He was furious. But Rav Avadja, you know, on the other hand, if you wear a shekel and you streak it white, wow, kol hakavod. This shows you're not faking anyone out. And that's what Reb Moshe paskens. As long as the boss knows his real age and he's not harming anyone, he's not taking someone else's job, there's no geneva dat, the boss says, Reb Moshe says, it would be permissible. Okay, now, and Reb Moshe, by the way, here, you'll see the sources that he says, see, it all depends on the purpose. And Reb Moshe quotes here, Shach HaTaz, a very simple shaila. I went to see a Talmud Friday morning. So this Talmud, a very famous Talmud, and he reminded me that the last Yankee game I saw, I went with him, we had the seats, Yankee game, we got soaked, it started raining, don't ask. We both, he almost got pneumonia from that Yankee game. And we both agree, I told him that's the last Yankee game I'll ever see. If I want to see a Yankee game, I see it on the computer in the luxurious settings of my office in Gris. See the highlights, genug. But we got soaked. And tell me, we're at the game. We had no women with us because, you know, when it comes to the New York Yankees, my wife and his wife, she's also my Talmida, not exactly anxious to see Yankee games. But let's say a lady was with us. A lady interested. Norm, if you go to a ball game in Atlanta, your wife goes with you or not?
Yeah.
Okay, good example. So I'm going with Norm, and what's your wife's first name?
Lydia.
And I'm going with Norm and Lydia, and it's pouring rain, and they have mercy on the Rebbe, and Lydia gives me her coat to cover my head with. Am I allowed to take it? Simlat Isha. This is Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe says yes. The purpose was not to make believe you're a woman. The purpose was to keep the rain off your body. So Reb Moshe says, Seichen Don, he quotes the Shach, the Taz, this whole Shaila. It's very powerful, very good. By the way, today with when you deal with raincoats, basically the Shaila would never come up because a lot of what they manufacture today is unisex. Follow, you come in, you buy, it's no different man, woman. But wear a fancy raincoat, tailored, the contour for a woman, all right, to keep the rain off you, allowed. To grow a beard so you should retain your job when you're not harming your boss, allowed. It could very well be that if this is so, to dye your beard to look younger, as long as the woman knows your real age, this should be allowed. And Reb Moshe quotes at the end of the tshuva, V'chein tshuva, he says, I just saw a printed sefer, Nizdamein li lirot sefer hama'ola agon Reb Leizer Meir Prel, Shemidaber b'zeh, V'chein tshuva me'hagon Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein Rosh Yeshiva, the Slabotka, V'he'elu gam kein lachatil itzpoa b'shvil chasagat misra gishaleke iso ona'a. Now that whole paragraph needs explanation, meaning you all understood the words. Naftali, there's so much deeper behind this. You see, for Reb Moshe to look at Achronim is rare. This is a Litvish posek. It's not an Ungarish, not a Hungarian, it's not Rav Ovadia, not a Sfardi. If you've heard Rakepit's lectures from 30, 40, 50 years ago, they're two different ways, totally different than Psak Halacha. So Rav Moshe says, it happened by chance, I picked up Reb Leizer Meir Prel's Sefer. And evidently he quotes the Levush Mordechai. Who is Reb Leizer Meir Prel? Well, let's see what you guys know.
Elizabeth?
He ties in with Elizabeth. He and Rabbi Teitz were Rabbi Teitz was his son-in-law. And Rabbi Prel was the Rav in Elizabeth. And when Rabbi Prel died, they said whoever will marry, there was one daughter that was not married, whoever will be the older one, there were two daughters actually, but whoever will marry the older daughter will inherit the rabbinate. And Rav Teitz came along, and she's quite a lady. It's a marriage that worked out very well. How do you benefit from the marriage? Why you? Who was the mashgiach? Rabbi Yosef Blau. Jerry Blau, Yosef Blau. No, he's a grandson of Rav Teitz. He's a great grandson married to a great granddaughter of Rabbi Prel, his wife, Rivka Blau is Rivka Teitz Blau, and her great grandfather is Rabbi Prel. There was the other daughter married Rabbi Raymond, who was Rav, I believe, in Highland Park. You can correct me if I'm wrong. He in that area, nearer to Philadelphia, and he was married. And there, Raymond's Kanain Her. I taught Raymond's. I've taught over the years. I had a classmate, the Rabbi Raymond.
That's named after him.
He was the founder. So that's Rabbi Prel, and who is the Levush Mordechai? That too is fascinating. The Litvisha world, again, I go back to my lectures, but not for now. Reb Chaim Brisk, by the way, a whole article came out today against Reb Chaim Brisk, Rav Mazuz, you know, I've dealt with this too. The Sri Deyesh, is Reb Chaim Brisker really a commentary on the Rambam, or is he a machadesh on his own, simply putting words into the Rambam? And that machlokes will live on. And I saw Rav Mezuzah already comes down on the side of the Sri Deyesh. And but Reb Chaim, as a result of Reb Chaim, the Litvish world lost the ability to pasken. You understand? When you can see something two different ways, you can't give an answer. This is Reb Chaim, a gavra, a cheftza, a din di alma, din miyuchad, etc., etc., kinyan di alma, kinyan kedushin. When you see it always two different ways, you lose the ability to pasken. And I saw my own Rebbeim, who all survived the Shanghai Mir. Wow. They, I hate to say it, but a little dummy like myself, I can pasken better than they could. I pardon me for saying it. I say, Kveshnist Alainvitsa pasken. I don't know myself how to pasken, they would say to me. But that was Reb Chaim. The Levush Mordechai was a hybrid. Do you understand what I just said? He was Klayim. He learned in the Lushan partially with Reb Chaim, partially with the Netziv. So on one hand, he had Reb Chaim's derech, although not as sharp as Reb Chaim. On the other hand, he was a shtat rav. He was the Rav in Slabodka. He had the paskin. He left Svarim Levush Mordechai not only Chidushim and Shas, but Psak Halacha. And he had that ability to be a posek. And that's what Reb Moshe is citing, that I saw Rabbi Prel, I saw the Levush Mordechai, and they are Matya Halacha Maisa. So according to Reb Moshe and these other poskim, it's not an isa per se to look in a mirror. It's an isa to look in a mirror, if you you're thinking, you're dancing around the mirror, you're playing with your face, you're having a contest with your wife, who stands at a mirror longer? But if looking in a mirror has a positive purpose, then it should be allowed. Dyeing a beard, if it has a positive purpose, it should be allowed. The only thing with a beard is ona'ah. And you know, this is life. This is what it's all about. You have to be honest. Gnevedat. This is the biggest problem in Shidduchim, all the shyness that come up. What if you know, nice fellow, fine, good. 10 years ago he was in jail. Do you reveal it? What do you do with a shidduch? A guy did tshuva, paid his price to the community, as they say. What do you reveal? Why can't you? Chafetz Chaim, Shmir Talashim. Endless comments on these problems that come along. But halacha lemaisa, you have to be honest. Do you have to be honest on the first date? No. You can, you know, make believe you're young, make believe you're a handsome bachelor who sadly never married until now. But if it gets serious, I would always tell my talmidim by the third date, reveal the truth, because you don't want it to come out later and cause conflict, cause consternation. Parents divorced, reveal what type of divorce, what type of relationship. All this will come out. You can't hide it. It's life. But at the first date, don't have to give your whole CV. You have to see, all right, does it catch? Is there... What's the word they use? The sense that this is going to somewhere, the attraction, that It gets off the floor, all right? But I would always say by the third date, you should reveal. Okay, now, Rav Menashe Klein is not totally pleased with Rav Moshe, and he says that there are viewpoints that looking in the mirror per se is a forbidden act. And here we come, very, very fascinating halachot. I hate to tell you this, that I used, when I was a kid and I learned the Yoredeya, I thought, gee, this is impossible. Walking back, you know, for 46 years when my legs were young, it's now 9 years ago that I found out I have, you know, meniscus, the legs, the kneecaps aren't what they used to be. So I can't go to the Kotel Friday night. I used to walk. It was the high point of my week. I never missed the Shabbos Friday. I had my own minion at the Kotel since 1969. And it's a funny story because I was the rabbi and my sidekick from the Bronx, Bobby Yesh, was the chazan. And Bobby's a little younger than I am. And both of us got knocked out the same week. Norm, the same week that I'm diagnosed meniscus and I can barely walk, Bobby can barely walk. And we never, ever had our minion again. But I met Bobby the other day and he told me the minion carries on, that there's still a minion there, but Bobby says it's all Haredim. I'm not like, Bobby's a little bit with the Haredi. His daughter married a Haredi, so Bobby got turned off. I don't think son-in-law did on me and that troubled him. I'm more open-minded, so the fact that it's Haredim, so I'm in Zayin Gesund, but we'll leave that for another time. Now, coming, walking back and forth, I would see in the shuk a barbershop. I still remember exactly where it was, right before you turn into the Kotel, that last street where you turn down. It's a barbershop. And I see this Arab working there with a razor. And I would always say to myself, boy, a Jew shouldn't go into this barbershop. Can you imagine an Arab is working with a razor? On all right, he can work here. Here's no shayla. But suddenly that razor. And then I said, wow, the Yoredeya comes to life. And this is the source. Yoredeya Siman Kuf Nun Vav. And it's Sifkat and Aleph, Sitkaf. Sifkat and Bet. Now, I want to tell you, I looked for the Aruch HaShulchan on this halacha, and there's no Aruch HaShulchan. And then it dawned upon me that years ago I discovered the same thing on these halacha that are so touchy, Jew and Gentile, there's no Aruch HaShulchan. I'm throwing out the question, does anyone know, and Rav Henkin Lo Aleinu, who's killed with his wife, Hashem Yikom Damo, he wrote on the Aruch HaShulchan, it's an unfinished symphony from the Henkin family. You know what I'm talking about? It's the B'nai Banim's son and daughter-in-law. I wonder if, what do you mean there's no Aruch HaShulchan? Is it that we're missing it? Or that he never wrote? For obvious reasons, he didn't want to get involved with the government and censorship.
I once looked up. Yeah. Forbidden images, those Hasumi Theocarker, I was involved with.
Right.
Interested. And he didn't write on that.
No, he didn't write. That's what I'm saying. On all these halachot, he didn't write. It's missing. It's mamish missing. I'm throwing out, did he write and it was put aside, or he never wrote? Does anyone know? All right, if anyone listening knows the answer, let's hear it. Okay. Now, let me hit this halachot. Ein mistafrin min agayim, ele v'makim shemitsuyin b'nei adam. Okay, you can't go to an Odei Avoda Zara. This is what we spoke about last week, 2 weeks ago. The Meiri saves us. If this halacha would be, you can't go to a guy, do you mean to say every guy is a murderer? And Norm just told me this morning that the Drakes and Little Debbie, owned by Seventh-day Adventists, and they love Jews and have their inheritance for Jews. No, it means an Ovdei Kochavim. Ovdei Kochavim already, there there's enmity towards Jews because we did away with idol worship, we gave the world monotheism, there's enmity towards Jews. And you can't take a haircut for the very reason I told you. They'll kill you with the scissors, kill you with the razor. It's amazing. Wow, how real this is. The only time you can take a haircut was an open Gemara with an Oved Kachavim if he thinks you're an important person. Eliot, let me tell you, B'didi Haviyuvda. I was a kid in YU, my whole life begins, I'm a very stupid kid, because I'm 51, entered YU, I've never graduated. I think, where are we today? 23, 80 years later, can I inherit? So, I would take a haircut on Audubon Avenue, Mr. Caruso. In my days, growing up, every barber was Italian. On Washington, was Mr. Monona, and he was Mr. Caruso. I remember him like yesterday. So I come in to the barber shop, and Mr. Caruso is shaking. He says to me, "You won't believe who is just here. I gave him a haircut." And he's like, "All of them humans." And he thanked me. I said, who is it, Mr. Caruso?" "The greatest rabbi alive, Rabbi Soloveitchik." Oh, I learned from Mr. Caruso what Kavod HaRav is. He was shaking. Wow. This is the halacha. That if the Ovdei Avodah Zarah Baba thinks you're a famous person, you can take a haircut. Allowed to take a hit. What does this mean? Very simple. God have mercy if you have a traffic accident. Alright, you have a traffic accident. You bumped into a teenage kid who's playing ball. Didn't see the car. Alright, I was once hit by a car playing punch ball on Washington Avenue. I was parking and I got off the field of ball and boom, my hand was had a few scars. I think I still have scars there till today. Nothing serious. Imagine if you hit someone, a state assemblyman, a state senator, a detective, a politician. Wow. Headlines in the paper. What a difference. Police act immediately. Chaim Yankel, let him be. Zala Bleiben will get there tomorrow when the clock hits midnight. Someone famous? Natan, you're on your way immediately. By the way, this can be good or can be bad. Naftali, tell me how it can be bad. You won't believe what I've seen in my life through my students. When the Lubavitcher Rebbe had his heart attack, in what was it, 1992 or so, they brought him into Mount Sinai Hospital. In the emergency room was one of my students from BMT. Was what they say in the Hebrew, stage. What's it in English? Stage, not residency, the first level. Internship, right? Internship. Stage. I've lived in Israel too long. I know the word in Hebrew. I forgot the word in English, but stage. Brought him into the emergency room. My student told me all the doctors were shaking. Lubavitcher Rebbe? And they called for a world famous doctor to get there immediately. They lost a precious hour till the other doctor got there. Follow me? So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Emergency room, you can be a young kid, but you're there at that moment. Get to work immediately, do what you can. Maybe we'll make the wrong move, the wrong diagnosis. I lost 1 hour, or 45 hours, told all the details. Naftali, if they think you're important, they're not going to kill you. Because if an Akum kills a kid, 14, big deal. Oh, he killed the famous rabbi. The government can't hide it. They have to act. Amazing, just amazing. Halacha and life, each one reflects the other. All right? The Yesh Machmirim, some of Machmir, the Ramah says, you're not allowed to take a haircut, even for Rabbim. A lot of people are around. But he's using, the Ramah says, a tar, he's using a razor. Quickly, he can slip, claim it was an accident, and you're gone. Im lo sheyereh b'mareh. Unless he's looking into a mirror. Wow. What does that mean? What does that mean? Looking into a mirror. You'll see. When you're looking into a mirror, you can protect yourself. You're watching what's going on behind you. So, could you imagine what we're talking about? You go into a barber shop, and a guy, an akum, let me not use the word non-Jew, let me use the word oved avodah zarah, you're worried stiff he may kill you. When we go into a barbershop, what's the first thing that happens? They put an apron on you. I don't know what other word to use. Right or wrong, they tie you up with the apron. Here you go into a barbershop, he puts an apron on you, and you have to hold the mirror in your hand like you're driving to see what's going on behind your back. Hey, wait a minute. A mirror? A man, a woman, lo yubash, how can he use the mirror? Look into Halacha Bet. Asur le'ish l'stakel b'mareh mishum lo yubash geva simlat isha. And once we mention a mirror, here, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin's black and white. Vic, forbidden to look into a mirror. It's a feminine act. Lo yubash. Aye, so wait a minute. How could you say he could look? You see the problem here? If you take the point of view that looking in a mirror per se is forbidden, how are you allowed to look into a mirror when you're taking your haircut? And what are our questions? You can't look into a mirror. So you see, the Shulchan Aruch qualifies it. You can use a mirror when? When it has a purpose. And what purpose? Interesting what they list out. Choshev Zienu. I just told you I had an eye infection. My doctor told me it's making the rounds. But wow, I had a bad eye infection. I remember a week ago, Friday, I felt so weak, so halushistic. So I'm always looking in the mirror. Is it still red? Has the medicine worked? Has the antibiotic eye drops, have they worked? Allowed. no question, no prohibition. When else do you give yourself a haircut? No, could you imagine giving yourself a haircut? I have one problem with it. You can give yourself a haircut here, here, here. What do you do with the back of your head? And this I haven't solved. And I waste 50 shekel every whenever I get a chance, because I get a guy take a haircut in Machne Yehuda. It's a barber I've used for decades. I trust him, he knows how the halachas, etc. And why do I need a haircut? Here I can cut, here I can't solve this problem. All right, for 50 shekel I can be a sport. But interesting, your purpose, you would be allowed. And the mirror, why are you looking in the mirror? And see, this is another sideshow part of life. Elliot, you take a haircut, yeah, walk away, you know, whatever. I got rid of half the hair. Look, we're all bald already. It's our age. I once had a head of hair. I looked a lot different. Norm, when Norm was my student, Mark was my student. Elliot, you're going back 50 years with some plus one, some minus one. But when they were my youngs, we all had hair. Who needs a mirror? But you see an important person. I'm the governor. I'm the president. I'm the chief of police. Oh, why do I look like you in the mirror? A little bit more here, a little less here. You look important. Permissible. No prohibition. Now, so what do you see from here? That even according to Reb Menashe Klein, when you look into a mirror, if it has a valid purpose, it can't be forbidden. Forbidden is only when it has no purpose. But when Yomo is giving himself a haircut, he has to look into a mirror. And he's allowed to look into a mirror. And that's halacha psuka. And ach, what a halacha here. Nevertheless, look into the Ramah, Sif Bet, Sif Katan Bet, Siman Kuf Nun Vav, Sif Bet, look into the Ramah, V'yesh Omrim, Hardy Osil open mara hainu dafka makom shen derekler open mara raknashim vi it bay mishum di ubash keva ababu makom shederekanashim li rotkam came bamare mutar. And here, see, the Ramah already more lenient. Where is it forbidden? When only women use the mirror. But where men and women use it together, interchangeably, intermittently, no problem. Hold on one second, I just want to finish the remark. And he says, and if it's for medical reasons, nothing wrong, allowed. And fascinating too, what are the medical reasons? Refuat einayim. What else? To take ktamim mipanav. I don't know what it means. Pimples, stains, blotches. I told you I had a problem with my face during the summer. All red. Look into a mirror. I take medicine. Wow. It improves. Oh, notzot. Or to take feathers out of your hair. I don't know what that means exactly, but if you walk through a garden and you come home, you'll see at times parts of the leaves fell on you. You can have part of a tree. You can have a little branch. You can have a little leaf. You want to clean out your head. All permissible where it serves a purpose. Okay. Yes, yes, Norm.
You're going to have
tefillin boxes with mirrors. Okay, so tefillin boxes with mirrors. is because of the Shel Rosh. And I've seen people, youngsters, they're holding it up and they're playing with their tefillin. Vic, why does this turn me off? First of all, when we were growing up, we were taught you go like this. And if it's in the middle, it's fine. Secondly, it shows you're an Amaretz. Why are you an Amaretz? Because Mokum Yesh Barosh Lanich Shnei Zukot Tefillin. And that's an open Gemara. And if there's room on your head to put on two pairs of tefillin, so it doesn't have to be exactly centered. All right, you hit the center, a little here, a little there, the yotzei, 100%. All right, that's what... excuse me?
It's this way or...?
No, we would go this way, to be sure. And then the field, it's where the... And the hairline is. In this case, we've got to... And
front to back and side to side.
Okay, I can understand what you're saying to balance it out. But you don't have to do just here. Perfect, good. Elliot, where does Mokum Yesh Barosh Lanich Shnei Zugot Tefillin? There are Mekubalim who put on Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam together. Have you ever seen that? Okay, now I'll tell you where I saw it, and Natan, why it works so beautifully. A Meshulach, I never forget this young Israel of Staten Island. What a crowd came to that minyan. They knew he'd be there Sunday morning just to see someone with Shnei Zugot Tefillin Bevat Achat. Let me tell you, he never collected more money than he did that Saturday morning in Staten Island. Josh, where did you see it?
That Sunday morning.
That Sunday morning, excuse me, I'm a pinek with the elections. You remember the story 49 in the great synagogue in Rehov Allenby in Tel Aviv. So the Mapai suddenly wanted to show their frum. So one of the Mapainiki walks into Shul on Shabbos with talis and tefillin on. He's like, he forgot Shabbos, you don't put on. All right, where did you see it, Josh?
The Feinstein.
Where?
There's a minyan, like 2 blocks that way.
So it's right here in Bayit Began. Okay, in Givat Mordechai. So I got to ask. I have grandchildren and great grandchildren in Givat Mordechai. I got to ask them if they ever saw it. But I remember it was a sight. Now, where does this Shulchan Aruch come from? I mean, you have to deal with the problem. You're not allowed to look in a mirror. What does it mean, not allowed? So according to Reb Moshe, it's right in consonance with Allah. If it has it's only when it has a negative outcome. When you're looking into the mirror for 10 minutes, like a woman getting her face together, her countenance together, call it what you wish. But if it has a positive purpose, certainly it's mutter. Reb Moshe only yasa when it's negative. According to Reb Menashe Klein, he's more inclined to feel that the act per se in front of a mirror for extra time, that itself is simatisha. But even Reb Menashe Klein has to admit that if it's for a purpose, perfectly mutter. Okay, where do we find this Gemara? So that's fascinating. It's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Chaf Tet Amid Aleph. And the Gemara says, Yisrael ha-mistapcheh me'ovet chachavim ro'eh b'mareh. The ovet chachavim ha-mistapcheh me'Yisrael kiven she'giyah le'belorit shomet et yado. What does that mean? And you see here, this Gemara is a proof that the Meiri is right. Where are all these prohibitions when it's an Ovid Kachavim? It's not Stam Goy. Someone who believes in Sheva Mitzvot is excluded. And this is basic to understanding our interchange today with the greater world and living in dual culture. But what's fascinating is, imagine, an Ovid Kachavim comes into you, Mark is a barber. And this Oved Kachavim wants a haircut. No, why shouldn't you be allowed? You're allowed to cut his hair, but it seems that the Oved Kachavim had a special blorit, a chuk, left a pile of hair that was done for idolatrous purposes. I'm quoting now from the Art Scroll commentary. A Jewish barber must cease cutting the hair as idolatrous custom is before reaching the special lock of hair, so that he should not contribute to the making of that lock by cutting around it. And you see, if you cut around that blorit, I don't know in English, what would you call it? A lock of hair? Blorit, where do we use blorit? In the Shulchan Aruch, relation to tefillin, the whole question of having a chup. The whole machlokes between the Chassidic world and the Litvisha world. You look at pictures of the Rav in his youth, pictures of Rabbi Hutner, Rabbi Yitzchak Hutner in his youth, look at pictures of Litvisha yeshiva boys in their youth, and they're all sharp dresses, flowing hair in front. How do you put on tefillin? They're swimming on top of the hair. No, what's the answer? As long as the hair is part of your body, it's not a chatzitza. Chsidim? Gaiva. Chatzitza, shave the front, put the tefillin directly on the forehead. This is where the word belorit comes up. By the way, I'll ask you a different question. What about someone who's a big businessman and he has to eat out with clients and he doesn't want to wear a kippah, puts on a toupee? Can he make a bracha? Can't he make a bracha? Could he put on tefillin? This shaila comes up. You follow me? But halacha l'maisa, we from the Litvisha world, you'll see in the Sfarim and the Achronim, you see there's also the Mishnah Brura discusses, it may be a madrega, not to have too big a chup, they called it, a blorit. But Me'ika hadin, if it's part of your natural hair, you can put on tefillin. But a oved avodah zara, who's got the blorit, got the chup, it's part of the avodah zara, and you're the barber and you cut the hair around it and that shapes the blorit, that it pops up, not allowed. And this is all of Masechet Avodah Zarah. Anyway, I trust you've learned Avodah Zarah. The whole question. Christmas, Easter, can you do business with them? Give them profit. The more profit they use, Avodah Zarah. Nowadays, you have a big business. Can you send out a New Year's card? Happy season card. Follow this, a lot has been written. Halacha l'maisa, nowadays, Christmas and Easter, Christmas certainly more than Easter, has no religious connotation. It's part of the winter festival. So, you're a business person, I wouldn't write Happy Christmas, I would write Season's Greetings. Formulate the card in a way that it's not Christmas. Easter is less celebrated because you have to be religious. It's Jesus. Jews suffered Easter time. It's killing the Messiah, etc., and all that goes with it. But Easter eggs, can you participate? Can you help paint the eggs, get the eggs ready? Well, these are very delicate questions, Jew and Gentile interrelationship. But all right, halacha lemaisa, this is the Gemara that is the source of the Shulchan Aruch and the whole question, what is the mirror? What is the purpose? What is Simlat Isha? And halacha lemaisa, this influences how you would deal with a beard. Does it have a purpose beyond the Simlat Isha? Or does it end simply with the thinking of Simlat Isha, feminism, feminist mystique vis-a-vis the male? And this is Reb Moshe, this is Reb Menashe Klein, and the implications weigh, it's not just taking a haircut, looking into the mirror, but the same implications would be implied about a man dyeing his beard. Now, there's one more Gemara that deals with this, and we'll deal with it next week. The Gemara in Shabbos, which deals with the Isurei Shabbos. But this much we see from here, from what we have. A lot depends on Yirat Shemayim, the Kavanat HaLev. And when you look into a mirror, how much time you spend? Why are you spending the time? And I think that's the touchstone. A woman would spend more time, a woman would be more concerned, am I pretty, am I good looking? A man would be more concerned, or should be more concerned, do I look decent? Do I look... Talmud Chacham sheyatza b'rav al bigdo chayef mita. Talmud Chacham, you have responsibility. People shouldn't laugh at you. People shouldn't make fun of you. And this is what it hinges upon. Nevertheless, a beard, can you dye it? Can't you dye it? How do we relate to it? And we'll pick up exactly where we left off next week, and we'll see a whole world opens with the question of dyeing a beard. Okay, so to reiterate, first of all, are there any questions from the students sitting in front of me? Yes, Josh.
So what is the actual halacha regarding someone who wants to put on tefillin on top of a toupee?
Halacha l'maisa, the only time you could allow it is if they do an operation. Someone who was missing hair, and they have an operation today, or that it mamish can grow back to a certain degree. That's not a shaila, because it becomes part of your body. But with a toupee, you can't be mat here. There's even a shaila, you don't say brachat with a toupee. Is that considered a head covering? Is that a head covering or part of your head? I would say b'diavad, if you have no choice and you're doing a big business deal and being able to eat and drink with them and make a l'chaim and not being overly Jewish for whatever the reasons are, I would say yesh matirim. But tefillin wouldn't get off the floor. But it's interesting, the fact that you can play with your hair. I know someone who took, I don't know if it was an operation or pills, or they injected something, and suddenly he has hair. Very vain. This is very vain, but he doesn't want to be, my wife always says she would throw me out if I lost my hair. Now what can we do? That's life. That's life. We're not what we used to be. We're not spring chickens. Far from it. But that's a delicate shaila. And there I say, Efshala Hakel, because it's part of your body, you understand? Even though it's artificial, Efshala Hakel. But there's a world, we're touching here, we're scratching issues, that there's a world of material. But you'll see next week, and you'll see his psak, and I'm going to show you, that you're going to see the Sefer Hasidim, and you'll see life before your eyes. These shyness didn't just come up in the year 2024. It's life. The Sefer Chassidim, 1,000 years ago, is dealing with the same shyness. Okay, so to reiterate, what do we do today? Yes, we went into more depth with the mirror, the purpose of the mirror, Reb Moshe, Reb Menashe Klein. I would say most interesting is the barbershop. And the halacha, and that's where the halacha begins, and we'll see next week or the week afterwards. Kanoyot, Bizman Hazeh, I imprint in the Suvi era. But yet, look how you go to an Akam, you got to be careful, he shouldn't kill you. My feelings of walking past the barbershop in the old city and seeing the barber with that razor, my feelings, I said, see, the Shulchan Aruch comes to life. More than that, look at the difference if you punch someone in the eye, you have a fight, and he's a nobody. Oh, the police come, they quiet him down. Imagine if you punch someone in the eye who's a somebody. You follow? And nothing has changed. Hundreds of years have gone by, thousands of years since the Gemara was written, and nothing has changed. Adam Chashuv Shiny.
Mordechai
and Haman. Mordechai and Haman, you can give many examples. But in life, you see it in the news, that someone has a lawsuit. Nah, who gives it up? Suddenly, it's big shots. Boy, you got to get to it quick, or you're gonna be in trouble. All right. Ad Kan. Tomorrow be Ezrat Hashem. A very important shiur. I'm ending off my, I wouldn't say reputation of Satma, it's much more than that. I'm ending off my proofs that if one wants to be a good Jew, one has to be a religious Zionist, plain and simple. And with Satma, we'll see, I'm not wrong. It's a reawakening. Israel is here to stay. If you know the latest news right now, you know what I'm talking about. The world is shaking in the Bell's Satmar world. And I may be right that ultimately, with all due respect to Rabbi Orlish, he will disappear, meaning his viewpoints on Israel, the reality overtakes the theory. Ezrat Hashem, once we finish the refutation, we go into the history of Yeshivat in Eastern Europe. And I'm going to begin with a whole introduction, a dedication, and I'm opening up your eyes to Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Deyesh. Ezrat Hashem. All right, I want to thank you for participating until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya. By the way, some freebies that if anyone remembers Rav Lesson from the yeshiva, this is a picture of Rav Lesson and family in Europe before the Holocaust. Unfortunately, we can't identify, we can guess who his wife is, and grandchildren, children. I wonder if this isn't Rav Avigdor Miller with the beard. He's the only one outside of Rav Lesson with the beard. I wonder if that isn't Rav Avigdor. If anyone knows, you can take it, right? Another very interesting picture, if anyone wants, which I take credit, was sent to me, and I was able to identify everyone in the picture. What is this about? that's meeting with Baron Alain de Rothschild, who visited Yeshiva. It has to be, this picture has to be in the late 60s, I would say.
Evelina, is that how you pronounce it?
What?
Was it Evelina?
I don't know, whatever.
The dormitory, like, near Baca, that's yeah. The
name,
something.
Like that. That's him. No, that's a girl, that's Evelina de Rothschild. That's,
yeah.
No, this is much later. Elaine de Rothschild, I think, is... the Rav was very fond of him because he had Jewish feeling. I write about it in my work on the Rav. Anyway, if anyone's interested in this picture, I can tell you who's in it. Number one is Max Stern, number two is Rabbi Langer, number three is Dr. Belkin, Baron Rothschild, the Rav, Rabbi Karasik, and Ludi Jesselson, Ludwig Jesselson. A very fascinating picture. And here, this picture has a whole story. Who do you see here? Is that being caught on the screen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, and I'm holding it. Who do you see here? Okay. Who do you see here? It's very fascinating, these two pictures. This just happened 2 weeks ago. Rob, if anyone wants a copy of this, you're welcome to it. I made copies of the original one. This is waiting online, getting dollars. The picture of a few weeks ago is a true story. I'm ashamed to tell it to you, but you'll forgive me. Rav Schechter and his wife are going towards the El Al plain, and the Chabad stand stops them, and it was nighttime, so they asked them to inscribe their children and grandchildren in the Sefer Torah being written. And they start talking with the Chabad Shaluach, and the Chabad Shaluach, I meet Rav Heschel today, the next morning he arrived and we meet and he looks at me, you won't believe, I never knew you're so famous. And so this Chabad guy says, what, you're from YU? You have the greatest Rebbeim in the world there. He says, I have a Rebbe, I've listened to all 1600 plus Shigurim YU Torah, nothing equals. And I said, what's his name? And the guy says, Rav Aaron Rakefet. Oh my gosh. So they were shell-shocked. And that's a true story. The other story is they're waiting online and they're getting dollars from the Rebbe. And it's a beautiful, beautiful picture. Also, if anyone wants, this issue of HaMizrahi has a whole biography of me in it. They gave me a whole pile for my grandchildren. My grandchildren aren't even interested. They watched it online. They saw it. They're right. Their grandfathers are Mazanka. So if anyone wants a copy, I don't want to throw these out. I can't throw myself into the garbage. If anyone wants a copy, you're welcome to it. Okay, open it to the world. Well, I apologize. We're over time and I see...
Recording stopped.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions from all the wonderful Jews who are Meisr Nefesh to listen via Zoom, particularly those in the States who stay up all night, Kanai and Hara? Any questions?
Wait, just one thing about the Aruch HaShulchan. Eitam Henkin does mention that I think one of the essays in the book is about missing sections. He says, I think he doesn't come to a conclusion. They found missing sections.
Right, but I know.
So he says it is possible that he didn't write about it or he didn't publish it because it's Dafka all the things about Avodah Zarah that he talks about. And there's a theory that some members of the Bar Ilan family may still have something deep in their archives that
they have to dig up. All what you said, I know, because I read the what came out from they edited from his writings. So we still haven't solved the problem. Did he write or didn't he write? And if he did write, why can't we find it? We found the Aruch Shulchan HaAtid. If you ever hear anything, let me know, because it's very...
You know, it was from the Bronx, I think, right? Was it his daughter who published it in the Bronx? Something like that,
yeah,
right?
He
did it in sections, and she gathered it into volumes. And the original edition has a thing saying that she was the one who published it.
Her name was Bashk, B-A-K-S-T. She lived in the East Bronx, Mayav Dobland, Rabbi Big Shul. We tried to find out if any part of the family remained Jewish, and all we could establish is they claimed they moved to Long Island, and there was someone in Long Island who told the rabbi, no one knows what happened. They have disappeared off the face of the Bronx earth, along with many others from the Bronx. The miracle is that your parents, Baruch Hashem, are still around, but not in the Bronx. They're in Queens. Today, no one is in the Bronx. Why? Because all the Jews in Riverdale get offended if you say you're from the Bronx. Riverdale is like a planet unto itself, Baruch Hashem. All right, are there any other questions? All right, I want to thank everyone. I only hope we'll never have such bad news again. The Eibishter should have Rachmanis on us. And I hope the government acts quickly and firmly and strongly and makes a statement that for every ounce of Jewish blood, we will take revenge like bad Christians, if you know what I'm saying. They always put us down. The Old Testament is filled with revenge. Our problem today is we've lost the ability to take revenge. Dam Yehudi Eino Hefka. I hope the new government will make us proud, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, thank you so much for honoring me with your presence, and I hope to see you all tomorrow. Be'ezrat Hanotein Layov Korach. Shavua Tov Mevorach. Baruch Atah Adonai Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyah Mitzvahu.